Today is Friday, July 1st, 2011. This is episode 191.
He was talking about gays and used the word barbarians and how you have the opportunity to sin and then you have to not do it. And right. And this is the guy who's telling her what to do.
You thought I was going to say bitch, didn't you? Welcome to Countless Screaming Argonauts. I'm T-Fab-P, the Fabulous Penguin.
And I'm Max.
And it's a Friday show, Max. We got the holiday. We just got things are going like crazy. We've got airplane trips. We got fireworks. We got the whole bit.
And I just realized I've got to be Dragonfly.
Okay.
Well, at least I have to drink. You know what? I know. I don't have to drink, but I plan on it.
So I'd like to start out with a little update based on what we were talking about last week. We were talking about stupid political mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one that I had tucked away that I wanted to talk about and that I completely forgot about it.
All right. Well, I guess we need to know about it now.
Okay. Well, it's from my good friend Rick Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Texas governor. So last week, the Texas legislature wrapped up its session, and he gave the closing speech.
Okay.
All right? And he immediately bolted from there and went on to address a Hispanic conference that was opening that afternoon. And he, of course, had to tell a little joke to start.
Mm.
So here's the joke that he said. He said that it was perfect that the Hispanic conference, perfect for the Hispanic conference to announce that they were appointing Jose Cuervas to the Texas Alcohol Beverage Commission.
Uh-oh.
Because his name sounds so much like Jose Cuervo, the tequila.
Yeah.
People were just beside themselves.
Incensed.
Incensed at the insensitivity. You know,
yeah.
Can't write this stuff. Writes itself.
It does, and I don't know how to comment on it.
History of the world, one idiot at a time. I mean, you know, you might as well just start a line with these guys.
That's it. We need to get some sort of casino credit every time a politician makes a gaffe.
We'd be rich beyond our wildest imagination.
We'd probably be dead in Vegas from too much fun.
Too much fun. Now, you said you had an update.
Mm, I do, and it's because I pronounced it wrong, and I didn't emphasize the importance of this. You remember we talked about this discovery, this archaeological discovery?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't emphasize it enough. I saw a show on it on TV last night. The place is called Göbekli. Let me try it again. Göbekli Tepe. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that needs to be emphasized is this place predates Stonehenge by 6,000 years.
Right.
It's 11,000 years old. And I've seen pictures of it. We talked about T-shaped structures.
Mm-hmm.
These are huge 16-ton monoliths, and they're carved, and this is entirely before the Bronze Age. These people had no metal.
Right.
And the carvings are beautiful. This is not, you know, Og with some dye on the wall. These are
These aren't cave paintings. We're talking sculpture.
Right, and the stones are standing on end with a capstone. And they're in a circle. It obviously has religious significance. We talked about that.
Yep.
The first thing you think is, how did they lift them?
Right.
They're not quite the size of the Stonehenge monoliths.
Right.
But this is – let me read you a couple of things.
Did you read the book Stonehenge by I can't think of the author's name.
No, I did not read any books about Stonehenge.
Yeah, it talked a lot about. I've always been fascinated by that and the Easter Island statues.
Yeah. This is kind of like the Easter Island things, except it's more sophisticated.
Right. But I mean, even the Easter Island ones are, you know, they're like icebergs. 2/3 of them are below the surface.
Oh, is that right?
Oh yeah, some of them go down like lot, you know, big distances and stuff, and it makes you wonder how these poor people, you know, using logs or whatever, rolled these huge, heavy stones for miles.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you know, this is one of those stupid things they have on the Discovery Channel where, you know, they hint that maybe it was space aliens. But it makes you wonder. It says here the pillars were big, the tallest 18 feet in height and weighing 16 tons. Swarming over the surfaces was a menagerie of bas-relief animals. We talked about the animals.
Right.
Schmidt is the guy who discovered it. And by the way, there were some archaeologists who found it in the 1960s, and they said, oh, these are just stone shards from the Byzantine Empire, and walked right by it.
Away.
Yeah.
Right. I think the most interesting thing about this is the fact that we're probably talking about the dawn of religion and or belief in the afterlife.
Right, and one of the things that they speculate in these articles I looked at was that they expected that architecture had driven people to cities, and now they're thinking that it was religion that got people to organize. But anyway, I want to read this little bit here. Schmidt speculates that the foragers living within 100 miles created the temple as a holy place to gather and meet, perhaps bringing gifts and tributes to its priests and craftspeople. Some kind of social organization would have had to have been necessary, not only to build it, but also to deal with the crowds it attracted.
Mm-hmm.
One imagines chanting and drumming. The animals on the great pillars seemed to move in flickering torchlight. Surely there were feasts. Schmidt has uncovered stone basins, and this is the most important part, that could have been used for beer.
Ah, yes.
It goes.
No society has ever gone anywhere without having discovered how to make beer.
That's right. Before metal, before American football, before anything.
Before sexy women in sports cars, there was beer.
Right. But right after the sexy women was a spiritual focus, but it may also have been the Neolithic version of Disneyland. And it just think about it. 11,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth going out to see. It's spelled G-O-B-E-K-L-I space T-E-P-E. It's worth going and finding a picture of Göbekli Tepe.
Maybe we could find a link to the Discovery show and put that on the website, too. That might not be a bad idea.
We should make the effort to do that, yeah.
Yep.
That's what I had about that. I just wanted to emphasize it.
Yeah, interesting. I wanted to talk a little bit about this study that they just completed out in L.A.
Okay.
Basically, it was a 3-year study that was completed by a senior federal judge who's also a law professor. And it detailed the cost of capital trials, the enhanced security, and legal representation for the death penalty.
Okay.
But now, California may be the state in the union that has the absolute worst financial situation of any of the states. Mm-hmm. You know, you can probably argue that fact, but
yeah.
I mean, with all the problems they've had, they certainly do.
It's in the conversation.
Right. They are spending $184 million a year to keep a bunch of guys on death row.
Mm-hmm.
Since they reinstated the death penalty in 1978, they have spent over $4 billion.
Right.
The costs come from everything from the fact that it's 100 times more expensive to kill somebody than to have them in prison for life.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there are automatic appeals.
Right.
Which they are forecasting are going to run into the $9 billion range in the next 10 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they still have possibly in the end of 10 or 15 more years, they will have 1,000 inmates on death row.
1,000.
Wow. 1,000 inmates on death row.
So are you suggesting that we'd be financially smarter to stop killing people?
You know, I think that when we're dealing with the kind of economics that we are at this time, that there are certain things that just jump out at you, you know?
Yeah.
One of them is the amount of money that we spend arresting people for pot.
Well, yeah, I'm a big believer in that. Not arresting people for pot. Yes.
Right. This one is another one that stands out. Spending that kind of money, billions of dollars, you know, and since 1978, they've executed 13 people.
Mm.
It's cost them $4 billion.
Well, you know, the counter argument would be don't treat them so well.
But you hear that, you know, you can say that, but they're not being treated all that well, number one. And certainly the whole idea of imprisonment for life without benefit of parole is not exactly.
Yeah. No.
Wonderful.
You could also make the argument that life in prison without parole is more cruel than just putting someone out of their misery. But I was talking about automatic appeals. And right. I was just throwing that out. I don't believe it, but it, you know.
Well, I just finished listening to John Grisham's book, An Innocent Man, which is the only nonfiction book that he's written.
Oh, that's interesting.
And it's about a court case in Texas.
Yeah.
And it was actually the first court case that the Innocence Project took on. Now, the Innocent Project is the one that the guy who was on OJ's defense started, and that they have overturned 130 cases based on DNA evidence.
Right, which is the strongest argument against the death penalty, in my opinion.
And I mean, you know, basically this whole thing about how these guys are treated was absolutely horrendous anyway.
Right.
But the fact is that, you know, the difference between life imprisonment with no benefit of parole versus all these appeals and stuff for the, you know, for the death penalty is crazy. It's not a deterrent. It's never been a deterrent. It was, then with states like California that have it, you wouldn't have increasing numbers of people being sentenced to it.
Yeah. Well, my dad always said, very simply, I don't trust juries. And the more I learn about the human brain and how memory works, I just would be highly, highly skeptical of executing someone based on eyewitness testimony. Yeah, you put them away because it's the best system that we got. But my sort of intellectual approach to this, I think I've told you, is beyond all doubt. You can't execute anyone unless there's absolutely no doubt. And that's a very high standard, and I'm not talking about someone just confessing, because a confession can be misplaced. You know,
It can be coerced.
Right. There's a lot of ways. Or it could be just in defense of a guilty person who is a loved one.
Yeah. You know, I just think that if you're talking about financials, if you're just going to talk about financials, it's crazy to even consider it. It's not a deterrent, and it costs us so much more money.
Yeah, it's an interesting argument. I do think that one of the problems that's going on with this country right now is that the states are having a shortfall because we are climbing out of a horrible recession, and therefore they're getting less income taxes, and therefore they're having less money. And we are going to climb out of it. There will be a economic growth. They had good numbers just today, as a matter of fact. There's a lot of stone throwing and union busting based on, you know, financial troubles, which all goes back to these fucking bankers.
Right.
And there I said it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead. You can say it.
Yeah. Well, no. You know, I didn't mean to rant, but it's. I just think that the people are. This thing about breaking the unions and these governors, you know, being so heavy-fisted, and the people just forgetting what happened. It's going to get better. There's a lot more money to come into state coffers, and you can't make philosophical decisions based on a financial condition that's going to change.
Right.
My opinion.
No. Listen, I know that you want to talk a little bit about Michelle Bachmann and the Rolling Stone article.
Yes.
But just before we do, I just wanted to know if you saw Morning Joe a couple of days ago.
Probably. I watched it most days.
When Halpern said that Obama's actions toward the Republicans was – he was being sort of a dick.
I don't remember that particular moment.
Mm-hmm.
Who's Halpern? I know the name, but I can't place him.
Yeah, he's a political commentator on Morning Joe. He's on pretty regularly. Young guy. He appears with Geis.
Willie Geis is on there
Willie Geis
all the time.
Occasionally.
The guy who looks like your kid.
Right, right. And he was asked a question. He was asked about Obama, how Obama's response to something. And he said in the thing, are we on a delay?
Uh-huh.
And Minka actually said, yeah, I think we are. He said, well, that's good, because then I can say this. And then he said, I think that Obama's been a bit of a dick to the Republicans. You know, it got a little bit of wash. MSNBC has suspended him. He had to apologize.
Really?
Yeah.
You can't say the president's been a dick?
I guess not. I guess that's what they're saying.
We're getting too goddamn sensitive. You know me. I'm a supporter of Obama, but come on. That show has a lot of free-flowing commentary, and just
I thought that it was a setup for a problem because he asked if it was on delay.
Well, yeah, kind of indicated he knew
that it was.
Right,
they could have taken it out if they thought it was a problem.
I think
they did.
That I think I heard that.
Yeah,
I'm. I think we've got to stop being quite so sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
That's a sidebar, I guess. But
sure.
Mark Halpern is his name. I think is he one of the reporters that wrote the book on the last campaign?
I don't know if he wrote the book. I'm not sure.
Well, I think
he's an editor for Time Magazine.
I think he's trying to be, the guy is who I think he is, he's trying to be really carefully straight down the middle. And You know what, I'm glad to hear people say opinions. That's fine. I don't have a problem with it.
We've had this theme where we've talked about, can you call Michelle Bachmann or Sarah Palin media whore because of the
right
implications of it and stuff. I wonder if this fits that sort of as an issue.
Yeah, I think so.
I thought the biggest thing is the fact that he thought that it could be cut out if people had issue with it, and it wasn't, and they had issue with it, and that's
they're trying to be too politically correct. I don't know.
Yep.
I just think that's
yeah, it happens. So anyway, I sent you that article from Rolling Stone.
Right, Michelle Bachmann's Holy War.
Right, we had just spent a good portion of the previous show talking about our lovely senator from Minnesota.
Congressperson.
Right, congresswoman.
Right.
You said that she scares you batshit, and
yeah,
and this is the exact same thing.
In the last show, I think one of the last shows I talked about how, don't take her too lightly because she is a lawyer. She's a tax attorney with an advanced degree from William & Mary, postdoctorate. Well, it's not postdoctorate. It's post-JD. And it turns out that her bachelor's degree is from Regent University. You remember Regent University?
I do. I remember that was where all of Bush's guys came from his Justice Department, that there was no justice.
right. It is a renamed religious institution who decided that they want religion to influence politics in a very heavy-handed way.
And that's her whole shtick.
Right. And that 60% of the graduates of this school don't pass the bar. these people are religious fanatics, and some of them were able to pass the bar. And so enter Michelle Bachmann. I thought it was interesting in Matt Taibbi's article that it said that her husband told her to become a tax attorney.
Right.
After, you know, she got off.
Because you are subjugate to your husband.
Right. And okay. he was quoted just today, but he was talking about barbarians. He was talking about gays and used the word barbarians and how you have the opportunity to sin and then you have to not do it. And right. And this is the guy who's telling her what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is the woman with a gay sister.
Stepsister. And I wish I know who said it first. The place that I heard that claims the expression batshit insane is Scott from John and Scott. But mm-hmm. all of a sudden, having read this somewhat in-depth article, 4 pages in Rolling Stone, Matt Taibbi convinces me that she's, you know, heading in that direction. And I have to read another quote. I know you don't like to hear quotes, but this paragraph was just golden. This is not to say that Bachmann hasn't played a prominent role in Congress. Oh, yeah, he's also talking about how she hasn't written any legislation. And when she was in the Minnesota legislature, she proposed a constitutional amendment to ban gay marriage after they passed a law that banned gay marriage.
Right. Yeah, she's done that several times.
Yeah, and everybody just ignored her, which is probably what should continue to happen. Most significantly, she cannily positioned herself as the congressional champion of the Tea Party. Last summer, she formed a Tea Party caucus, which she now leads. She just stood in front of a movement. It wasn't her movement. She's just claiming leadership.
Just got in front of it, yep.
The public has become acquainted with some of Bachmann's other excellent qualities as a politician. Her TV-ready looks, and I mean...
Which is a real nice way of saying that she's pretty.
She's pretty. Her easy confidence in public speaking, which comes from being sure of herself, doesn't make her right, just like it doesn't make me right when I'm sure of myself, too, which I still think she's batshit insane. Her quick command of a mountainous database of frequently bogus facts, but often overlooked is her greatest quality, the gigantic set of burnished titanium Terminator testicles swinging under her skirt. And that's from Matt Taibbi. And I'm back to she's I'm at a loss for words. This is all about being afraid of the gays and getting religion in government.
Right. Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. Interestingly, the quote in there that bothered me the very, very most.
What was that?
It was that, you know, you and I, we've talked a lot about politicians who stretch the truth or lie.
Right.
And she's done a couple of whoppers. You know,
right?
She was the one with the
well. Let
Obama
me ask, before you say this, and I want to hear these quotes. Think about lies versus flat ignorant,
right?
Misinformed. Go ahead.
Right.
Say me.
Well, she was the one who said that Obama was spending $200 million a day on his trip in Japan.
Right. Now,
which was that was fabrication total.
Just complete fiction.
Right. And the one that bothered me the most was towards the end of the article where she was talking about the fact that, you know, she's raised 3 kids. She raised 23 foster kids. And then she said something along the lines that she needed to cut the interview short because she really needed to go home and do a bunch of food shopping for the crowd.
I'm nodding my head and smiling.
And there is no crowd. All the kids are gone. There's nothing there.
Right.
But she wants to present this homie.
Right.
You know,
that was the idea that I had, that she had 28 people at home waiting to be fed.
Right. They're looking for meatloaf and mashed potatoes.
They've all left the nest.
Right.
That's a lie.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
And that's a bald-faced lie. The thing about the $200 million, she's can be wildly misinformed. And she's also dangerous. The thing that on the Chris Matthews show, which I happened to watch live when she said it, the media should investigate members of Congress to see if they're anti-American.
Right. Yep.
What the fuck is that?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, the
I know.
Best thing you can do is compare that to Joe McCarthy.
Sure, the best.
She's batshit insane.
Yep. Yeah, I agree.
So,
that's well, listen, our time is running quickly to an end.
Okay, I'll have to let
you know. So I think we should maybe end with a couple of funny or uniquely different or...
All right, I got a dumb not-so-dumb I want to throw at you.
All right.
Ryan Martin, 29, and Erica Claiborne, 29, and I've absconded with these from News of the Weird. We're charged with reckless endangerment in Derry Township, PA, after Martin was shot in the jaw. The couple were playing a game resembling Marco Polo with a loaded handgun. With an eyes closed, Claiborne firing when Martin shouted, "Gun."
Oh, you got to be kidding.
Is that dumb or not so dumb?
Yeah. Pretty much tips the scale on dumb.
I think maybe so. All right. A News of the Weird classic. In September 2006, according to sheriff's officials in Buffalo, New York, this is just amazing. Thomas Montgomery, 47, murdered a 22-year-old colleague in an online love triangle involving a West Virginia woman, except that two of the three people involved did not exist. Ostensibly, a young Marine flirted with an 18-year-old woman. But unknown to each other, the Marine was actually Montgomery, remember, was 47. And the woman was actually her mother, 45, pretending to be her daughter. The workplace colleague, not pretending to be anyone else, had struck up an online conversation with the daughter also, making Montgomery jealous enough to kill him. Thus, in the make-believe love triangle, the only real person is now dead. Is that amazing? Yeah,
that's pretty weird.
Not funny, but that's amazing. That's the age of the interwebs right there.
Yeah, for sure. I got one for you.
All right.
Just a real quickie on our way out the door.
Please, hit me.
All right. Everybody knows, or a lot of people know, the fact that Walt Disney had a bit of a risque side.
I didn't know that.
Yes, he did. And if you look carefully in a lot of the animations that they did, there are phallic symbols and stuff like that.
All right.
Yes, there are. It's not a very, very modern thing.
Yeah.
I found this little quote about something that he did in 1938.
Okay.
He produced a gag reel for Warner Brothers.
No kidding.
For their for the studio's anniversary.
Okay.
And in it, Porky Pig is pounding nails.
Uh-huh.
Into a workbench, and he hits his thumb.
Oh, no.
And he stammers. He stammers for about 30 seconds.
Yeah.
It says something like, "Son of a gun." And then he looks right at the camera and he said, "You thought I was going to say bitch, didn't you?" I just thought very, very Walt Disney-esque.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's funny.
Hi, this is Miss Nicole of 8 Beer Sampler Productions. You've been listening to Max and T-Fab Pete, the fabulous penguin of Countless Screaming Argonauts, the podcast of record. Listen to their podcast adventures at csapodcast.blogspot.com or download it free from the iTunes podcast store. Just search Countless Screaming Argonauts. The boys love to hear from you, so email them at csapodcast@gmail.com. Finally, if you want to show your allegiance to the show, pick up some CSA swag and help make the boys famous. You can purchase hats, shirts, and mugs, along with other appropriate gear, at Cafe Press. Click the link on their webpage. And thanks for listening.